It's the story, stupid. Welcome to It's the Story, Stupid, the Word Trip podcast. I'm Charles, your host and co-founder of WordTrip.com. We've been voted one of the top 101 websites for writers by Writer's Digest for the last 3 years. Normally, we're here to talk books, writing, and the publishing industry, but today we have a very special conclusion of my interview with Orson Scott Card. Without further ado, here it is.
Okay. I had a few questions that were specifically on your work.
Sure.
On your work, what do you feel is your most underappreciated work?
Well, none of them are underappreciated by me. I don't think there are any underappreciated works by me that are underappreciated by me. But works that I was surprised they did not do better. I really thought the Homecoming series would catch on. I don't understand why it's still said. You know, the people who love it.
Yeah.
But I think it's because every review said it sounded biblical, and it does have a scriptural root, not the Bible. It's doing for the Book of Mormon what the Mabinogion series by Evangeline Walton did for Welshmith and what Roger Zelazny did for Indian story. And so even though we didn't tag it as being Mormon, I think people got the idea, Card's a Mormon and this is going to be religious fiction. And it's not. I mean, there's a God figure in it, but heck, there was a God figure in everything Asimov wrote too, and he was an atheist. We all knew that. Or an agnostic, however he wanted to typify himself. But so that one was a disappointment. I thought that was going to do better than it did. But, you know, it's out there and it has its audience, and I have no problem with that. Ditto with the Alvin Maker series. It's doing well, and I could make a living doing I could live on just the sales of Alvin Maker books, just not as well. Not I could afford to publish magazines.
Yeah.
You never know. My standalones, I think, are my best work.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of the Ender series, and I'm glad that the audience has embraced it the way they have, but you want my best novel, you'll be reading Enchantment or Magic Street or Lost Boys and Homebody, or you'll go to the Women of Genesis. But, you know, I'm not worried about that because I just do the best job with every story I have to tell, and then I hope they'll find an audience, and they all have. I mean, I'm not complaining about any of it. And when the audience is really small, usually I can find a problem in myself, like Heart's Hope. I'm really proud of that book, but I reread it recently, and I realized that there's some stylistic things in there that are really off-putting.
Yeah.
And I did them. And I did them while I was in grad school, and so I blame myself for having gotten sucked into the graduate school, graduate English program mentality a little bit. I'm toying with the idea of going back and doing a new edition. The problem is that the publisher would want to release it as a new edition. And it would be the same story. So people who'd read it before would go, how is this new?
Yeah.
I don't think they'd even miss the stuff that I'd take out. But it could have benefited from that. And then there are other works that are flawed, and I'm aware of the flaws, but they were the best I could do with the story at that time, and I'm willing to let them stand. You know, they don't have to become perfect.
Yeah. My two of my favorites are standalone. I really enjoyed Treason, and my favorite, and was the very first book of yours I read, was Songmaster, and which I'm one of the few people who didn't come through Ender. My sister introduced me to Songmaster. I really loved Songmaster.
Well, see, those books are both flawed. Treason should not be in first person. Should not be. I should have done it in third person, but I was a young writer, and young writers often make that mistake. First person put severe limitations on what I could tell, what I could have included. The world should be bigger. The book should be longer without adding more story, because we should have been able to explore more. And the relationships could have been made more interesting if they weren't having to be reported by the main character himself. With Songmaster, it has a structural problem, which is it ends and it still has about 60 pages to go.
Those last 60 pages that actually make me cry on a reread.
I know, but when you start those 60 pages, you go, why am I still reading this? The story's over. Because the story that was promised by the beginning movement of everything is done. But then about 20 pages, which is too late, 20 pages into the last portion, you start to realize why it's there. It's a really long denouement. Structurally, that's a problem. But am I going to change it? No. Nah. Because readers like you get through the hard part, and they get the payoff and value it, and you'll tell your friends, and your sister told you.
Yeah.
And so it has a life of its own. Is it my bestseller? No. Could I live if that were the only book that I'd written and its sales were all I had to live on, oh no, I'm dead. Yeah, you know, my family would have starved long ago. I would have had to get an honest job. But it has its audience, and it's profitable to my publisher to keep it in print. And so I'm happy with it.
Happy's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Which of your characters have you really identified with the most, at least when you're writing, or maybe looking back on them?
As I'm writing, all of my characters, they're all me,
yeah.
Including the horrible ones, including the stupid ones. I mean, I take it all out of my own knowledge of human beings, which consists of me,
yeah.
And then my observations and suppositions about other people, but that means my fantasy version of them, not what they really are, because I have no idea what they really are, I only know what I think they are. So it's all me, and I identify with all of them. I can't write a secondary character well unless I identify with him strongly enough to give you what he thinks he is, to let you see his self-story. That includes my villains. You know, I have to know how they see themselves, who they really are, or who they think they are, as opposed to who they really are. I'll give you both viewpoints. In the sense, though, of feeling like a character represents me, there's only one, and that's Step Fletcher in Lost Boys, because he is me. I mean, that's my one autobiographical novel. I hope it's the last one I ever did, because it was so grueling to write,
yeah.
Emotionally grueling. But that represents not really my family, because even though it's based on my family, again,
yeah.
They are their own people. And I mixed it around, and I had a fictitious son added in, who's partly based on my oldest son, but I wouldn't want to burden him with the idea that he had this character that was supposed to be him.
Yeah.
He knows that there are differences. He knows that I wasn't inside his head. But I took incidents from his life,
yeah.
And took some observations of him and made them into the character of Stevie. But the only character truly based on reality is the character based on me, but I made him smarter than me, and he actually thinks of the cool things to say at the right time instead of the next day.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that sense, he's absolutely a fantasy version of me. But and he's smart enough to have brought a tape recorder along to a key scene in which I did not have a tape recorder and therefore had no proof. Nevertheless, that's the only character that represents me. Now, there are bits I've stolen from my own life to toss in. You know, people sometimes made a big deal about the fact that Ender Wiggin is a third child, and I've openly said that in a way I based his older brother and sister on my older brother and sister only in the sense that they represent what I, as a five-year-old, thought they were.
Okay.
But then I extrapolated further, and in no way does Valentine represent my older sister. No way does Peter represent my older brother. They're completely different characters now. They've taken on a life of their own. So that was just a starting point. And it's grossly unfair both to the people and to the characters, to me as a writer, to say that these characters are based on certain real people.
Yeah.
Likewise, none of them are based on me, except for Step Fletcher.
Are there any particular characters that really ran away with their storyline that you were totally not expecting?
Oh, what a list I have of those. I mean, in the Alvin Maker series, we're talking Little Peggy, Arthur Stewart.
Yeah.
They weren't in the outlines. In the Past Watch, The Redemption of Christopher Columbus, I thought I was writing a novel about Columbus, and it wasn't until I realized I was writing a novel about these made-up time travelers who happened to visit Columbus. But Columbus is the MacGuffin. He's not the hero.
Yeah.
And that's what allowed me to finally write the book. Those characters absolutely ran away with me. As I go through novel after novel, there are characters that were virtually unplanned. In Magic Street, which I think is some of my best work, I had the character of, and now I'm going to lose all my character names, my main character, Max Street.
Yeah.
I had him. I knew who he was. But I didn't know that, I didn't even know who the old black man that we meet at the beginning was.
Oh, okay.
And I certainly didn't know that he was Puck.
Yeah.
I certainly had no plan that, I knew there was going to be a woman on a motorcycle because Queen Latifah had asked me to do that. But I was not, I had no idea that she was Titania. That came out of nowhere. But I also didn't know the character of Cecil. He wasn't in the outline. He just came up. I just needed a kid to find a body. Not a body, to find the baby.
Yeah.
And that was Cece. And then he became really important to the story. And Word, no way was he in it. I just gave the character of his father a son.
Yeah.
But then he was kind of cool, and I kind of liked the name Word. And so I fiddled with him, and then he turns out to be really important in the story. And that kind of thing happens to me all the time. Who knew that the bear in Enchantment was going to be anything other than a vague menace under the leaves? Instead, he ends up being a talking bear, and he becomes one of my favorite characters I've ever written. So that happens to me all the time. In fact, I kind of rely on that happening.
Well, sorry for the abrupt ending there, but that was actually the end of the questions to Card about his own work, and it was actually recorded in the middle of the other two interviews, which were already posted in the feed. Thanks again to Mr. Card for his patience, and Mrs. Card for her patience, with me asking all the questions. There will be another Word Trip podcast coming up in the next day or two with some of my thoughts on the writing class and writing in general and the interview with Card. And also there is possibly going to be an interview with Richard Lowry coming up in the next few weeks, who is a Word Tripper with a book out called Marines in the Garden of Eden, and I'll post a link to that in the show notes. And in the meantime, remember, it's the story, stupid.